and welcome to the Ship Energy Podcast. This is Mark Williams broadcasting to you from Cambridgeshire in the UK. My guest this week is Giampiero Soncini, Managing Director of a firm called Oceany. And we got Giampiero in to talk about voyage optimization and the digitalization of shipping. We always talk about how digitalization is the twin process of decarbonization, so Giampiero can help us to put some meat on that skeleton, as it were. He believes that the future of digitalization in shipping lies in achieving complete control over all aspects of navigation planning, fuel consumption, and emissions. Now, his experience for this comes from the fact that he started way back in the Italian Navy, where he worked for 14 years from the early 1970s, and for 13 years was actually the technical manager for the NATO Research Vessel Alliance, which ran the world's first ship to be equipped both with GPS and inertial navigation system, INS, technology. And it was during his time there that he became passionate about integrating technology onto ships, a skill he later refined while working at Spectech, the company behind the AMOS management software. In fact, he was CEO of Spectech for 11 years before he moved to Oceany a few years ago. So let's go and talk to Giampiero about trends in onboard data collection, analysis and reporting, automation, decision support and autonomy, and the benefits and limits of voyage optimization. Giampiero, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for taking the time to see us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me over and talking about my favorite topics.
Very good. That's why we have the podcast at all. But for those of us in our audience who don't know you or Oceany, perhaps you could take a minute to introduce yourself and the business.
Well, I've been in shipping 53 years now. So I joined the Naval Academy, the Italian Navy, in 1971. I was 14 years an Italian Navy officer, electrical engineer with specialized in automation. Then I resigned and I joined NATO, where we built a sophisticated ship. Let's call it a spy vessel. At that time, it was the Cold War. And essentially, we built a vessel to listen to the underwater radiated noise from the Russian submarines up in the North Sea. It was the first vessel in the world with a GPS, the first vessel in the world with an integrated navigation system. It was phenomenally modern, and combined the experience that I had with the Navy and the experience that I had with NATO basically made me fall in love with the technology applied to ships, and especially computer and software applied to ships. And this is why I resigned from NATO. It was a harsh decision given the wages that NATO paid. But I decided to join an organization called Spectech, of which I then became one of the major shareholders, also the CEO. And I worked with Spectech in total for more than 20 years, and I just loved it. But in 2017, I decided to leave. Personal reasons, I decided to leave, and I joined an area which was even more modern than what I was doing with Spectech and the software called AMOS, and which was performance monitoring. And when I started to work in this field in 2018, there were essentially only three companies in the world doing this kind of activity. So essentially what we do, we collect data from navigation equipment and from engine equipment, and we monitor every aspect of the vessel. I think it's very modern to do it. And I think I'm going to do it for another couple of years. And then, having turned 70 this year, I think it's about time that I leave my place to younger people and I retire and write my memories.
Oh, not at all. You know, the young people don't want to work in shipping. They all want to be TikTok influencers. So there's still room for a few of us gray hairs yet.
And anyway, yeah, so basically that's it. We created Oceany last year. We carved out the business from an existing company, a company that was a competitor of mine, Spectech. It was called IB, a cute company, very nice one. But the new owners of that company did not want to have the performance software, and so we carved it out, and it has been an excellent choice because we have plenty of customers and plenty of work. And as I said, essentially we collect data. We are a data collector aggregator. We analyze them. We display them. We build the fleet monitoring control rules. And we provide absolutely everything that the customer needs to have in terms of signal and signal analysis. When it comes, our software does also all the analysis part, analytical part, but then we have a decision support system which gives all the inputs to the decision makers, which are the fleet managers, the fleet superintendents, and ultimately the CEO. And we control fuel consumption, hull conditions, engine conditions. So we do condition-based maintenance on the engines and absolutely everything. The propellers situation, even including the azipods. We monitor 8 different types of fuels. And of course, we are totally compliant with the new EU ETS part and with all the emission monitoring, etc., etc. You just name it. I think today is the most powerful software in the market. We're definitely not the biggest company in the market, but I think that the others are still very much behind us when it comes to the software that we have created.
And the purpose of this is to make the voyage more efficient.
Absolutely. It's efficiency at all levels. So it's route efficiency, it's engine efficiency, it's hull efficiency, emission efficiency, propeller efficiency, you just name it. The idea, of course, now everybody is into the emission part, which is a pity because we do by far more than just the emission part. But I think it's going to be like when I started with Amos in 1986, nobody wanted to use a computer on board ships. Nobody knew what planned maintenance was. Nobody knew that I could use a computer to run what was called at that time CMMS, a computerized maintenance management system. And it took us a long time because the push came from the ISM code in 1996. That gave us very strong push into the planned maintenance part and on the quality management and so on. And the further push came out with the TMSA, for sure. Now the push for software solution like our performance solution is coming from the emission part. But in reality, the way we see the shipping evolving in the future is that software like ours will collect all the data to allow then the ship to be completely autonomous. And that is the other part of my life that I would like to see happening. It's already happening. When I started to talk about ships without crew in 2007, people were laughing. In 2013, I was booed at a conference because I showed how shipping would have ended up by having no crews on board, especially on the transatlantic and transpacific liners. But now it's happening, and we are a small part of it, of course, by collecting data and analyzing it.
Autonomy theme is an adjunct to the decarbonization theme, but it's interesting, isn't it, especially in the light of such a global shortage of seafarers and a predicted shortage from Nigel Draffin, who will be well known to many of our listeners, who's a regular speaker at Ship Energy events. He said at one event last year that we could have a shortage of 80,000 qualified engineers by the end of this decade because nobody has their ammonia ticket or very few people have their methanol ticket yet. So, how do we replace these people? And one way to replace them is potentially, I suppose, with machines, with artificial intelligence, with autonomy.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, aside the fact that DNV just recently, last week or 2 weeks ago, they basically started to allow a chief engineer monitoring by being in the office. So they basically said, okay, we can allow this to happen. Technology has taken, what I'm doing today, I was doing it 40 years ago. In 1986, I was doing what I was doing today on the NATO ship. But the cost of doing at that time was in the hundreds of thousands of dollars a year between communication costs, between equipment, computers. They were very expensive. For vibration monitoring, I was using an FFT analyzer, which was 22 kilos. Today, I have it on my mobile. You know, it's what has changed is that the price and the dimensions have compressed enormously by a factor of thousands. So what would cost in 1986, $500,000 of 1986, not of today, of 1986. Today you get it for 5,000 euros. And therefore, everything that was science fiction 40 years ago, like an unmanned vessel, is now, technically speaking, absolutely possible. And I must admit that as I spoke about it very early in the concept, I'm happy to see that, IMO took it very seriously, created the MASS, the Marine Autonomous Surface Ships instructions and regulations. And Norwegians and Japanese is always ahead of the game, but even the Americans, even if they've done it mainly for military purposes, considering that their merchant navy is almost non-existent. Remember, when we talk about mass, when we talk about autonomous ships, crewless vessels, and all these kind of things, we are talking about vessels who are really going in open water. So we're talking transatlantic, trans-Pacific to start with, even if the Yare Birkeland started in Norway. But if you're talking about large vessels, you're talking about large open sea. I don't believe there will ever be a crewless passenger vessel or a crewless ferry or a crewless tug, you know. But for sure, a crewless or a very reduced crew container vessel going, for instance, from Shanghai to Seattle or from Tokyo to Los Angeles, in my opinion, is absolutely, totally, completely possible. And I know that the Japanese are already doing it, and they plan to probably have the vessel already, the first one operating next year. They've already started the trials and everything else. So is it because of COVID, a little bit because of the lack of manpower in the industry? Absolutely, because who wants to go at sea to work 8 hours and then be stuck on the vessel another 16, or work 10 hours and be stuck on the vessel for another 14 for 1 month, when you could monitor everything ashore? Does shipping need to change? And a lot of things. The azipods must become ubiquitous, so not only on the cruise vessel or the large LNG vessels. We must install azipods to every vessel. We must create redundancy schemes. But when I hear people saying, oh, Gian Piero, this is so stupid, what happens if the shaft breaks? What are you going to do? And I said, well, what are you going to do today if the shaft breaks? What are you going to do? You're going to call tax anyway. So what the hell? Some of the reasoning that I've read is pathetic. Some others, of course, are more substantial. You know, they're saying, I want to focus on what is really can be done. But from a technical point of view, we sorted almost everything out. From a regulatory point of view, we still have a lot of work to do.
So let's go back to voyage optimization. Does this system require lots of extra sensors to be built onto the ship?
No, we make use of every sensor which is available on board. The only thing which is important, in my opinion, and it's something that still astonishes me because we still found even new ships without them, is you need flow meters and you need a torque meter. Without that, calculating fuel and calculating emission is, you can do it with your hands then. So if you really want to, but, if you really want the savings that you can have with these solutions, a flow meter repays itself in absolutely no time, maybe in 3 months, maybe less. And therefore, sometimes I really don't understand the resistance that people have about installing them. Flow meter and torque meters are a must, and I've already discussed with some classifications on why they don't make them compulsory. If you want to reach emission control, we must have them. Otherwise, everything else is empirical. And imagine the difference when you take readings like we do. We take readings every 5 seconds, but it's tunable, so you can take it every second if you want. One of our largest customers, MSC Cruise, takes readings every second. Imagine how much more data you have at the end of the year versus a moon report, which is the typical activity that you do today. Every second, so 60 times a minute, 3,600 times an hour, and multiply that by 400, and it becomes enormous. And the number of data, the analysis, even on the performance of the engine, even on the performance of the vessel, on the route monitoring, on the route analysis, becomes important. And it gives a lot of advantages, not only to the owner, but also to the charterer, because they can look at what happened in a specific time, because everything is recorded, everything is memorized. And memorizing data today, we are talking about, a small amount of bits per every single signal. This is telemetry. So every temperature is six bytes, so it's extremely small. And therefore, you can literally memorize a fleet of 500 vessels and keep it for 5 years and you don't even reach 1 terabyte of data at the end of it. So data is not a problem anymore. Data transmission is not a problem because it doesn't occupy any band rate, any substantial band rate. It's only a very small amount of kilobits that you send on a daily basis. And if you use Inmarsat Data Express or Marlink or whatever, you have a fixed rate, and that is okay, or you negotiate a fixed rate. So it is definitely an enormous difference. I'm pleased to see that large shipowners are using, are all going into that direction. I'm surprised the small ones are hesitating a lot. I'm really surprised. Because it actually, the advantages that it gives them, it's enormous in terms of saving.
Let's talk about that. What kind of savings are available, say, on fuel consumption or miles traveled?
So I take our history of close to 500 installations. So not that many, but good ones. Basically, we go from a minimum of 3% to a maximum reached only once of 11%. Which is a lot of money on a large container carrier, on a large tanker or LNG. Is basically a lot of money, even if it is LNG propulsion.
That's 3 to 11% reduction in fuel spend, in fuel consumption.
And this is without accounting for malpractices, because unfortunately our industry is what it is, and pilfering of fuel is a very well known sport. And therefore, that is without accounting that part there. Because if you count that part, because it cannot happen anymore, or if you try to do it, you'll be found very, very quickly. So it allows a lot of extra control from the ship owner or from the charter. Sometimes, you know, I can understand that ship owners don't like to be monitored too strictly by the charterers. But hey, we want openness, we want clarity, we want everything to be shown, to available to everybody. We have to change our mentality set.
I was going to say, well, shipping is not the only industry that suffers from malpractice and fraud. You know, if you were to count up the number of tax fraudsters in prison and see how many came from shipping versus how many came from other industries, then we might perform quite well.
Certainly, yeah. But remember, we're also a macroscopic industry. Eh? 1.8 million seafarers. Versus hundreds of millions employed in any other type of industry.
So what other advantages can come from voyage optimization? Thinking particularly about relations with charterers, you know, the BIMCO and lots of other organizations are trying to replace the kind of hurry up and wait clause in most charter parties with something that's more cooperative. Can this kind of data, can sharing this kind of data enable a better relationship between the owner and the charterer?
Absolutely. And also between the, you know, everything can be linked in a way that you talk, for instance, you have your ship talking with the port where I'm supposed to arrive. And everything can, the computers today, it's not only, everybody is talking about artificial intelligence. A few years ago, we were all talking about something else, you know, because it's always like this. So the marketing industry wants us to push new names, new logos all the time and so on. But even without artificial intelligence, today, if you talk with a port and if you talk with a meteorological satellite or a provider, etc., you can absolutely streamline your route in the best possible way for you to arrive on time, not to speed up and arrive early. Because now if you speed up, by the way, you beat your consumption and your emission agreement, and therefore you cannot do it anymore. At the same time, you cannot arrive late. At the same time, you still have to take into consideration bad weather. And the amount of analysis that a poor captain has to do: should I go right? Should I go left? The weather is better there, but it's going to take me 2 hours long, so I now have to speed up a little bit more in order to arrive on time. But if I speed up, my emissions will go higher, and if my emission will go higher, what will happen to my ETS? And therefore, you know, you must spend your lifetime calculating all these possibilities. The computer does it in a nanosecond. And the computer can talk to the port, where the port will tell you, hey, by the way, we are congested, don't hurry up so much, or maybe divert to somewhere else. And all of this part here can be done, at the end, can be done automatically. Not today. We need, there's going to be an agreement between all ports. I always loved what the aeronautical industry has done, that they basically got all of them together to streamline landings, departures, so that it is unique all over the world. You know, all airports have the same procedures in landing, the same procedures in takeoff, and the same jargon, the same everything. We don't. We have 900 ports, and they all operate in a different way, and they all have different systems. But there is now, on computer terms, there is API. Everybody is API compliant, application programming interface, which means that I can talk with any other system. It may take a little bit of time to tweak them one after the other. I may have to talk with a lot of ports, but if I want to really have route monitoring, and I am a C and I have the powers to talk with the ports where I go, I can have it done in no time. And that is a huge difference, really a huge difference. And again, you know, shipping doesn't move very quick, but it moves. You know, 20 years ago, 40 years ago, we always had these ways. I remember, I'm old enough to remember when the GPS arrived. And when the GMDSS arrived and everybody was up in arms, no, you cannot, how can you live without a radio operator? Who will send an SOS and so on? And then you get the Yaper, and then when the ECTIS arrived and everybody said, no, you cannot do this, it's absolutely impossible. And then instead the ECTIS took place and now every single vessel has ECTIS. Well, within 20 years, 40% of the world fleet, especially the ocean-going vessels, will operate automatically because it makes sense, because it saves money, because it saves life, because it saves the environment. There is only a winning streak out of applying technology to shipping today.
That's a really good note to end this interview on, because we're coming to the end of our time. But before we get to that, if any of our listeners want to find out any more, presumably there's an Oceanly website they can go to, or are you appearing at any upcoming events you'd like to let us know about?
I normally go to MSN events. I go to several events. I was in Posidonia not exhibiting. We are full of work, thank God, so exhibitions this year have been taken out because we are, in any case, still a small company. But the website is www.theoceanly.com. Because Oceanly.com was taken, and the guys who owned it and don't use it wanted $100,000 for it, so I said, oh, my dead body. And that's it. And my mail is gianpiero.soncini@theoceanly.com.
Best of luck to you, Gianpiero. Thanks very much for coming onto the podcast to talk to us today.
Thanks. Thank you very much for coming. Bye.